I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, and this is my co-host, Ron Meneza.
Good morning.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You may also email us at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can listen by podcast. So if you're driving in your car right now and you know you're not going to be able to listen to the whole thing, this show will be recorded and podcasted, so never fear. And if it's a topic that's near and dear to you, you can hear it at another time. I've got a Facebook page which can be accessed by @FranStorchND, as can my Instagram and Twitter. That same handle, @FranStorchND. They make it simple for you now. So, yeah, let's go for it and let's talk about all kinds of stuff. All right.
Stuff. What do you got on the list today?
Well,
for
first
stuff?
Of all, what's interesting is I'm in the air flying.
I know.
I'm broadcasting from the air.
And I'm playing a pre-recorded show for you.
Right. Pre-recorded.
Yeah. But that didn't really happen, did it?
No.
No, because Fran stayed home because she got sick.
I got sick.
The doctor gets sick. What's with that?
You just stepped in it, didn't you?
I did.
I hate that.
Oh.
Oh, how I hate. How can the doctor get sick? You know how many people ask me that? Oh, and you know how red I see when people ask me that? Instead, so if you're a regular person and you happen to be walking around with a cold and you're not feeling well, people say, oh, I'm so sorry, you have a cold. Here, take this elder syrup and echinacea and go home and go to bed and drink tea and I hope you feel better soon. To me, they're like, you're the doctor. You can't get sick. You should know better, or something like that.
Like how you're supposed to know better.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
Well, you do everything you can, and sometimes you get sick anyway. But also, the life of a naturopathic physician is a busy life. I mean, if you're really living the life, one of the things you do is a lot of things. You know, I mean, if you think about what I do, I do this show. I promote this show. I do social media for this show. I have Facebook Lives and videos that I make. I actually see patients. I have a practice, which takes a lot of time. I read and I study and, you know, and I do marketing and I prepare for talks. I give the talks. You know, I do a lot of things.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing I do is I work out a lot. And, I had somebody say to me, well, I know the weather hasn't been good, so I guess you haven't been on my bike. And I'm like, or have I? Because they always talk to me about, well, you know, it's not bike season. And I'm like, well, it doesn't exactly, I don't have an off season. I have a what's the weather is doing today. If the weather is suitable for being on your bike, I get on my bike outside and ride. Get on your bike and ride. Won't you take me home tonight? Anyway, so, and if the weather is not suitable for being outside, I ride a bike indoors. So, you know, I've been on my bike ride along. And to complement riding the bike indoors, I've been to yoga classes and I do resistance training. And, you know, when we're done with our spin class in the morning, we do core exercises, which is something we're going to talk about today.
Ooh,
But we do core exercises. And I was thinking about those core exercises. One of the things to think about is if you are being diligent about going to the gym, unfortunately, that's another way you can get sick. You know, because there's germs on the on the mats and the balls and the weights that you're using. It's another way to pick up illness, unfortunately,
unless
being at the gym.
You wipe everything down.
Yes. Well, if you wipe it, like you have to wipe it down before you use it as well as after you use it. Yeah,
right.
I know. But
right.
And I don't wipe it down before I use it. It's
no,
true.
No, I don't either.
So you know, you can get sick. Do I use my neti pot every single day? No. So that's my own fault. You know, if I would use my neti pot every single day, I'd have a less likelihood of getting sick. And just face it, if you're trying to work out and work, you know, a regular life and run a business, it's stressful. So there's only so much you can get away from the stress. And I see sick people all the time. So there's only so much, you know, hand washing. Now, mind you, I use lots of hand sanitizer. I have stock in a particular holistically oriented hand sanitizer company. But, you know, there's only so much I can do. And eventually, you know, you're going to catch a cold because colds mutate. That's what they do. So if you're interested, what did I do? The number one thing that I did is I turned off my life. Once I got out of work on Friday, that was it. I literally laid around for 2 days.
You did?
And yeah. Then I gradually worked my way out of it back to, you know, being in the swing of things. And since I was supposed to be in Florida, I didn't have patient care for a few days. So I'm going to be back to patient care tomorrow. So I got to rest a lot, and that was pretty good. Today was the first day I had to be somewhere at a particular time.
You're a good rester.
I'm a good rester.
Yeah, you did good.
Yeah. So it got me to thinking. So I did a lot of resting and lying around and things like that. And I drank fire cider, which is great. I took shots of fire cider. Fire cider makes me feel really good. So fire cider is organic apple cider vinegar that's been steeped with garlic. Depending on who's making it, it can have slightly different ingredients, but usually it has something like garlic and onions and horseradish, and it can have ginger in it. So it has spicy, lots of nice spicy peppery things, and it can have jalapeno pepper in it. It can also have, depending on who's making it, it can have citrus in it. It can have orange and or lemon in it and honey. And some people choose to leave the sweet elements out. I've had a fire cider that had, I think, cayenne, ginger, horseradish, garlic, and turmeric. And that was a very good one. And it was completely savory. There was nothing sweet in it. There was no honey or fruit in it. And I enjoy the ones with the citrus in it as well. The other thing I had was fresh squeezed grapefruit juice. That was really good.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was very, very yummy.
That.
Yeah, it was very nice. The fresh squeezed grapefruit juice. And it was unpasteurized and had no additives, and it was really delicious. So, yeah, we'll have to finish that off because, you know, it only stays around for so long. It was very, very good. I did some more lying around. I took elderberry syrup. I took a bunch of that. I took a mucus thinner called guaifenesin. Guaifenesin is what's in, you can get products with guaifenesin in it at the drugstore. And I try to recommend to people, get the plain guaifenesin. Don't get the one with that says DM on it for a cough suppressant, or says CF on it that has sympathomimetics, things that dry you out. The decongestants, just get the plain guaifenesin because it's just an extract of guaiacum bark and it thins mucus and it makes it easier to come out. The other thing that thins mucus is water. And I'm always, you know, in the quest for drinking more of that stuff and not quite, you know, falling short, but trying very hard. But I need to let you know that, you know, drinking lots of water is a really good way to, you know, help your colds and flus because you're making extra secretions and it will help thin your mucus and bring it out more readily. So I did that. And I took an interesting product called tucuna, which is a rainforest herb that is prepared by a specific company. And I took a few doses of that as well.
Is that some sort of a tree plant? What is that?
Yeah, it's a plant.
Yeah, okay.
Some kind of a plant. I don't know if it's a tree, but it is a rainforest herb. And it's used for, you know, it's used particularly for viral illnesses. It's actually, tucuna is the name of the product. It's produced from the bark of Cecropia strigosa, and it's found in South America. And it's a really nice antiviral. So I used that. That was good, too. And, you know, it's been less than a week. Well, it's Wednesday. I came down with the cold on Thursday. I'm, you know, pretty much better now.
Way better. You're much more energetic and you seem better.
Well, I laid around.
You did.
So that was very good. Yeah, I do highly recommend lying around. If you want to get rid of a cough or a cold, the best thing to do is to turn your life off. I mean, I'm very sad because I missed the UConn women's basketball game. I could have come to that game and you know, sang O Canada with Kia Nurse.
I know she would have loved to have you there because I don't know if anyone else was singing with
her. Yes, I would have got on TV and carried a little Canadian flag, but I didn't. So yeah. big shout out to the seniors, Gabby Williams and Kia Nurse, and my sister from up north, Kia. So, yeah. Oh, well. What are you going to do?
Her mom and her dad were there. They probably sang.
Well, that's good. Well, at least her parents. It's more important that her parents are there than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I would have liked to. But in part of my quest to stay home and rest, that's what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did.
Right. So I
that's
stayed
right.
home.
My sister appreciated the seat.
Right. So you got to go with your sister, which
I
is
did,
nice.
Which yeah. is always nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So. All right. So one of the things that I noticed that while I was lying around is that I'm at that age.
Uh-oh. What age is that?
You can relate to this. I'm at that age where if you lie around a lot, your back hurts.
Oh, yeah. I have some information on that.
Around lying around with your back hurting?
About your back hurting.
Yeah. So one of the things that will cause your back to hurt is not moving enough. If you get more exercise, it definitely will make your back will hurt less in the long run if you get regular exercise. Of course, you can do some exercises that will acutely hurt your back and you have to be nice to your back. But I know for me, one of the things I do is I do a lot of core exercises. And in fact, if my back is sore, if I then do my core routine, by the end of the core routine, my back doesn't hurt anymore. And the first set of exercises that I did because, you know, I ease back into exercise, I get a fair bit of exercise. So when I'm easing out of my, you know, lying about for my cough, because I don't exercise when I'm sick. That's one of the things that goes out the window. I just don't. I whatever they say, you know, if it's above the head, you can continue to exercise. If it's below the head, you shouldn't. If I'm sick, I don't exercise. I just stop. Because obviously, if I'm sick, that means I'm run down and I don't need to use extra energy on getting exercise. So I don't. And,
well, it's just another thing that you're taxing your body with. So you're making your body work a little bit harder for it.
Right.
I have mixed views on that. I mean, some things I just really feel like I need to get out and clear my head out. And depends on how I feel.
Yeah, no. No, if I have extra congestion in my head, then my breathing is compromised. There's no reason to be out there using my apparatus to push me up a hill when I should be inside pushing fluids and taking mucolytics and doing neti pots and resting. So it's much better to wait. I suppose if my job for a living was getting exercise, I might see it a little bit differently. But really, if there's any way to turn your life off, I think that's a good idea. There's just no point because I don't feel well if I'm exercising if I'm sick. One of the first things I did, in easing back, I didn't do cardio exercise. I did my resistance workout and I did a modified version of my resistance workout. And that really helped my back. I mean, because first of all, the lying around gives that stagnates my back and I have a lot of arthritis in my back. So it needs a lot of extra circulation to help keep it going. And so if I get exercise, it feels better. And so I did my resistance workout, which included my core workout. And the core workout really tends to iron everything out. So there are many common causes of low back pain. And, you know, it says here the most common cause directly of low back pain is muscle strain and ligament sprain, which is basically another way of saying tight muscles. Your muscles are tight. Yeah, they get tight in the first place. And if you take a step back from that, the big cause of back pain is that we as animals tend to walk upright. Because we walk upright, we have all this gravity helping to stabilize us and hold us in this upright position. And it's not as efficient as if we walked on all fours. So you're going to see less back pain in animals that walk on fours than you will in us. You know, so that's part of the issue, that we are Homo sapiens and we stand up and walk around. And that's part of why we get back issues. But when you talk more directly about what's going on with back pain, it has to do with muscle imbalances and muscles being tight for various reasons. How do they get tight in the first place? Well, there's many ways that they get tight. One is that we don't drink enough water. We dehydrated. So when you're dehydrated, your muscles aren't plumped up enough, and they tighten up. They, you know, the cells sit closer together. They don't expand and contract as well, and they're not as well hydrated. Also, muscles are always contracting. When they're working, they're contracting. And when they contract, they're metabolizing and they're making metabolic products. And you need extra water to carry those metabolic products away. So if you're not hydrating well, your back's going to hurt more. Lots of stuff's going to hurt more. You're going to get delayed muscle soreness of all kinds. But that's going to keep your muscles tight. The other thing that gives us back pain is the cubicle sitting. So all the sitting that we do in our lives. So long sitting gives people bad backs. Mm-hmm. And you can do all you want to, you know, it's better if you sit ergonomically, that if you have a chair that's good and supportive. That if you have strong core muscles when you sit, and if your station is ergonomically designed such that your head is in a neutral position, you're not looking up and you're not looking down, that your head is in a comfortable neutral position and that you can easily see your computer screen in a neutral position, and that your arms are also in a neutral position. They're not too high and they're not too low. So you want your arms to be in a neutral position, so your keyboard has to be in the right spot, and then your feet have to be in a neutral position as well. And you don't want to be sitting too high up in your chair or too low. That your body has to be in a neutral position. That's the ideal ergonomic position.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's not there, it's a good idea to put it there. Even so, it's not a good idea to be sitting for long periods of time. That if you have to sit for a long period of time, it's a good idea to get up at least every half hour and just stretch. Just you know, do a good old, I just got out of bed in the morning stretch. That's a good thing to do.
I stretch. I get up. I walk around the room by my office, and I've got one of those bars that I hang off of.
Yeah,
and
that's so even better.
I'll hang off of that, and I'll just hang for like a minute or so and just kind of let things kind of, you know, click out or whatever. I don't know what you want to call
it.
And
the hanging is good. And if you don't have a bar to hang off of and you're able to do this, in yoga we call it the forward fold.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're able to bend over, bend double, and just hang off of your waist and hold your arms so that they're not supporting you on the ground, that they're just hanging, that your upper body is just hanging and your body is bent forward, that'll do something similar, because what you're doing when you're hanging on the bar, yes, it's going to you don't have the upward pressure of the ground, and
right,
you have your back having the ability to stretch out. When you're inverted as well, when your back is inverted,
right,
you have gravity pulling the back in the opposite direction, because when you're standing, you have gravity pulling on you in a certain direction. So when you reverse that, then you can pull out the vertebrae that have been sitting on top of each other. They can stretch out.
So if you hang upside down, it's probably even better if you could do
right. That's something that people do. If you can hang upside down, remember when you were a kid and you hung upside down at the bar in the playground? Yeah, mm-hmm. That's something you can do. They also have inversion tables, and you can invert. As long as you're inverting, you don't have to invert to 180 degrees, but you can invert to 40 to 90 degrees or 45 degrees, you know, off of horizontal. And as long as your head is below your heart, you're going to get some benefit out of that.
What about standing on your head?
Right. And standing on your head. Standing on your head can be helpful.
Kind of hurts.
Well, inversion poses in yoga are helpful for a number of reasons.
Sure.
Of course, if you're doing a headstand, yes, that's going to, to an extent, that's going to help your back, but you have to be able to execute the headstand. Most people can't.
Oh.
Okay. Most people can't do a headstand, Ron.
Okay.
Is that surprising to you?
I guess maybe not. Maybe it's not. Yeah, you're probably
are
right.
You're just one of those people that's so strong that you can do
crow
pose, and you can do side crow, and you can do a headstand.
Uh-oh.
most people, and did you know, Ron, that most people can't ride a bike 60 miles? Most people.
Boy. Here we go.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I do know that. We're talking to
people who we're trying to help people get involved in fitness. But to assume that most people can do advanced yoga poses is
you're not paying attention.
No.
I know. I got it.
Right. So that's why when you go to yoga class and you have, you're not in the super advanced yoga class, which I almost never go to anymore. I go to the moderate class.
Mm-hmm.
Props.
Yeah.
So if you want to do an inversion pose, one way to do it is, you can do inversion poses without doing a headstand, but what you do is you prop yourself up. One way that you can do a shoulder stand. And you do it supported. You put blocks underneath your hips, or you do something like simply get up against the wall. That can be really helpful.
Right.
You get up against the wall, so you lie on your back and you get up against the wall. So you're in a pipe position. In other words, your legs are 90 degrees up from your back, and you lean them against the wall, and that can be very nice on your back. And that's the other thing. Use the wall. If you do want to attempt a headstand or a handstand, use the wall to support you. And again, that's kind of an advanced pose. I think it's easier for a lot of people just to bend over and hang. Even hanging from a bar. Not everybody has a bar, but, most people can bend over and hang their head, just do a forward fold. That's something that you can do. Not everybody can do downward dog even, Not everybody even knows what downward dog is.
Right, because there's downward facing dog, and I got a few of them here. This is five easy ones to do. Dolphin pose.
Yeah, dolphin's not so easy.
Yeah, because you're on your forearms instead of on your hands.
Yeah, that's a dolphin is kind of a more advanced pose than plain old downward facing dog. It's harder to execute.
Yeah, you got to use a lot more of your core and upper body on that one, I guess.
Well, yeah, and it's a more intense inversion pose. It's a more intense pose. Like if I was going to tell my patients, here's some easy stretches you can do to stretch your back, I wouldn't give them dolphin unless they were really doing a lot of yoga. I might give them downward facing dog, but really for your regular people, you want to give them easy things to do while they're lying on the ground.
Yeah, this is not all easy.
There's
one here that might be considered easy.
Right.
But because you're laying on your back.
Yeah.
And it's called a supported shoulder stand.
Right. And so that's something that you wind up doing in yoga. And the supported shoulder stand is you're going to be making use of blocks. And you're going to put the blocks underneath your hips. And that's not so tough to do. And we do that a lot. Like when I go to yoga class, we do that a lot.
Mm.
Meanwhile, I think what we should do is talk about the general causes of back pain. So, like I said, we're talking about general sprain strains and long-term not lack of stretching. When you don't exercise, regularly, you're going to be more likely to have a bad back. And by exercising regularly, that means going for walks just because you're not getting the circulation into your back and you're not exercising your core.
So there was a great piece on this on National Public Radio this week, and it was about the lost art of bending over and how other cultures spare their spines.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was kind of interesting.
Uh-huh.
You want to talk about that?
Okay, we'll get to that in just a little bit.
Okay.
So the other things that happen to people as they age, unfortunately, is that as you age, you've been standing on the planet for so long that gravity really gets to work on you. And so you get these very, very basic things that happen. So your discs, you have these discs in between the vertebrae. So there's these discs, these cushions, and they're made of collagen and fibrous tissue and fluid, water, and they cushion the discs in between each other. So over time, they start to degenerate and deteriorate, and they can have little breaks in them.
Ooh.
Yeah, they can have little breaks. They can herniate. They can stick out from between the spines. They can encroach on the spinal column, which is called spinal stenosis. They can actually do this weird thing where they degenerate, they become inflamed, and they cause inflammation into the actual bone of the vertebrae itself, and you get these nodes in your spine called Schmorl's nodes. And you can see little blood spots. Like if you do an MRI, you'll see little blood spots in the vertebrae.
That doesn't sound good.
No, I know. And so when you have a herniated disc, what you're talking about is the disc is pooching out. So you have your spinal column, right? And so you have these discs in between the spinal segments, mm-hmm. and it pooches out from in between the spinal segments. So that's a herniation. When the disc is simply breaking down, you call it degenerative disc disease. You can have facet joint dysfunction. So the facets are the joints in between the vertebrae. There's these little tabs on the sides of the vertebrae where the vertebrae interface with each other, and they're called facets. So if they don't sit evenly on each other, they can be sitting off kilter. You're going to get pain there. And if the facets can get calcifications on them, or they can rub and cause inflammation and pain, or they can just not sit right on each other, and that's going to cause back pain too. You can get dysfunction in the sacroiliac joint. So your sacrum is the bottom part of your spinal column, and there's vertebrae in it as well, but they're fused. And so your sacrum is the bottom part of your spine. The very, very bottom part is the coccyx, and it's your little tailbone there. And that's at the very bottom of the sacrum. But on top of the sacrum is your lumbar spine, and that's your center of gravity. So your biggest vertebrae are there. There's five of them. And that's where people's backs start to degenerate, because there's so much strain on those four vertebrae or five vertebrae there. And so you can have dysfunction when the lumbar vertebrae doesn't sit perfectly aligned with the sacrum. So you'll get more shock to that area, and you get, if they're not lined up, you get more banging against those lumbar vertebrae, and then you get more disc dysfunction, unfortunately. And then spinal stenosis, as we were talking about, it's when those spinal columns, when the canal gets narrower and it can be encroached upon by the vertebrae. And it can be encroached upon if the vertebrae are not lined up with each other, if just there's inflammation. And when that spinal column is encroached upon, that can cause pain. And then you can even have spondylolisthesis. And that's where your spine, one of the vertebrae slips over the adjacent one, and they can slip forward or backward. And there can be a dysfunction in the shape of the vertebrae, or it can just be degenerative that, you know, it's unstable. So you can have movement, unnatural movement backward or forward on those vertebrae. And of course, you know, you can get just arthritis where you have pain and inflammation and degeneration of the joints, and that can hurt too. And then there are deformities, and the deformities can happen for various reasons. And so your spine has a natural curve to it. And so your cervical spine has a lordosis. Lordosis means it's curved. The apex of the curve is to the front of your body. Kyphosis means the apex is to the back of the body. So you have a normal cervical lordosis, a normal thoracic kyphosis, a normal lumbar lordosis, and a normal sacral kyphosis. And those can, if those are exaggerated, that can be a problem. And certain conditions will give people, one of the things you see when somebody has a humped back, they have an exaggerated thoracic kyphosis, and that can happen because for various reasons. If somebody, when they're growing up, they're poorly nourished, they can wind up getting an exaggerated thoracic kyphosis. And you'll see that if a young person has an exaggerated thoracic kyphosis, probably a malnutrition issue. It can also be weak ligaments, and it can also be if a woman who has osteoporosis, the vertebrae get weaker, and you can start to get compression fractures in the front, and that's where you tend to get them. And so the spine tends to curve forward, and you'll see that in the thoracic spine where people have that more stooped posture.
So what can you do about this?
All right. And then you can also have... And then you can also have scoliosis. And scoliosis is where you have abnormalities to the curve from left to right. And so some people have that to a slight degree, and some people have a really marked scoliosis. And, you know, they have, and some people, when they're kids, they'll have a scoliosis noticed and they'll wear a brace, or they'll wear something that helps to correct the scoliosis. And some people just kind of live with it, or some people it gets noticed later in life, but it can cause problems and pain, unfortunately. And of course, if you have trauma to your body, that can cause, obviously, that can cause pain. Compression fractures, as we said, compression fracture can happen as a result of an injury. It can also happen as a result of bone density issues, osteopenia and osteoporosis. There can be very serious issues that cause back pain, like infections, tumors, and autoimmune diseases. Those are more rare, but can definitely happen. So there are many different ways to treat all the different causes of back pain. And the most common causes, I said, are, you know, wear and tear. That's mostly what you see. All those things that I described, the facet joint dysfunction, degenerative disc disease, lumbar herniated disc, people have varying levels of a lot of those things. So what do you do about it? Well, first of all, you have to recognize whether you're moving a lot. Are you moving enough? Because if you're not, you're not going to get circulation to those areas, and those areas can't heal. The other thing is, as we talked about, as you get older, the discs tend to dehydrate. Gravity has been working on them for a long time. People lose height. I can't tell you how many people come into my office and they say, I'm 5'9", and I measure them and I'm like, yeah, you're 5'7¾". And they're like, I shrunk. And I can't tell you how many times that happens. It happens all the time, to the point where I'm like, is there something wrong with my scale? Because everybody always says to me, they're shrinking. And I think one of the things that may be happening is their doctors are not, the doctors they go other places are not measuring them. So they've been measured 10 years ago and they haven't measured in 10 years. So
it's like what's on their driver's license, maybe off by as much as 2 inches.
It can happen.
Yeah.
I said to my mother always thought of herself as being 5'3", and I'm 5'3", and I'm still 5'3", thank goodness. And my mother said to me, I'm 5'3", and I looked down at her and said, yeah, Mom. My mom's not 5'3" anymore,
no.
And she has a little bit of that kyphosis going on.
Your mom's also not 20 years old anymore.
No.
No,
and I seem to have maintained my height as of yet, which is pretty amazing because I do have marked degenerative disc. But there's probably some good reasons for that.
You do a lot of yoga.
I do a fair bit of yoga. I do a lot of core.
Yeah.
Yes. I would say yoga I'm not as diligent about. Certainly, I'm diligent about stretching after I do my workouts. I definitely stretch after I do my workouts, and I definitely I do yoga when I like doing yoga. By doing yoga, we mean going to a class and doing a whole practice. But I don't maintain that as much as would be beneficial for me. But you know, I definitely stretch most days, and I definitely do core half the week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I've been real good about that this winter. 4 days a week core. That's really good.
And it helps.
Yeah, definitely does help. So if you have back pain, it's a good idea to get some assessment. Well, the first thing to do is, like I said, getting exercise is good. And we'll talk about some core exercises that you can do. But in the meantime, I just want to do a big shout out once again to all of the practitioners that can help you with back pain. Quite honestly, MDs can only do so much, because MDs are not trained in putting their hands on you and fixing your problem. All right? That when you have physical pain, physical medicine is really helpful. And back pain responds so well to good physical medicine. People do not get massage. We don't value massage in this country or in Western society. We don't value it. And so It's often not paid for by insurance. I mean, I think some insurance companies are getting better about it, but it's not valued. People don't put a value on it. They would rather, you know, go out on a, think about this. People would rather go out and spend a bunch of money on a concert or going out on a Saturday night than paying for a massage.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
I see that.
And so, and you think about how much you spend on, you know, going to get coffee or going out to dinner or, you know, going out for drinks or your entertainment. And yet people won't spend money on a massage, and massage would be so much better for them. You know, massage is really, really good for people. People also have a mind trip about massage, that massage is sexual.
Some people don't like to be touched.
And some people don't like to be touched. That's mm-hmm. true. And it's an unfortunate casualty of this society that people don't, we don't have a tradition of touch for health.
I know.
It's really unfortunate because massage is so miraculous for all kinds of pain, as are other physical medicine modalities. If you don't like to be touched, okay. You can get touched a little bit less if you go to a chiropractor. Chiropractors are tremendous for back pain, as are good quality osteopathic physicians, doctors of osteopathy. So the interesting thing about doctors of osteopathy, osteopathic physicians can practice the same way that MDs can practice. And what that means is a lot of osteopathic physicians, that's how they practice. They don't do osteopathic manipulation, even though they're trained to do it. They just don't do it because why, when they can just be doing, you know, regular MD stuff and prescribing medications. But some osteopathic physicians do osteopathic manipulation and do a great job at it. And osteopathic manipulation is somewhat similar to chiropractic manipulation. Chiropractors, of course, do chiropractic manipulation. So if you go to a good chiropractor can adjust you. And they just basically do manipulation where they put your spine back into alignment. And it's tremendous. And chiropractic massage, acupuncture, and physical therapy have all been shown to significantly reduce back pain. They all work really well for back pain. And they're going to work better in the long run than any pill that you're going to take. And, you know, if you're doing, and pills come with a cost. Not just the money that you're going to pay for them, but they come with a cost. If you take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, they can irritate your digestive system and cause inflammation. And if you take, obviously, if you take opioids cause addiction and all kinds of other problems. And you can only take so much opioids because they cause severe health problems. The first health problem they cause is addiction. The next one is constipation. And beyond that, they can cause respiratory failure and death. They can be very dangerous. So, and they also, the interesting thing about opioids are analgesics. They don't reduce inflammation. And one of the deals you have, one of the reasons you have pain with back pain is that you have inflammation and you have dysfunction of parts working against each other and you need a reduction in the inflammation. And opioids don't buy you that. All they do is they make it so that you can't feel the pain that's going on. At least anti-inflammatories reduce inflammation, and that is, in fact, helpful. So if people take ibuprofen once in a while, I don't begrudge them that. But I would, of course, rather see people taking natural anti-inflammatories and things that are actually going to help rebuild their spine, like products with collagen in them. I really like esterified fatty acids, which can help to rebuild the discs. I like collagen 1 and 3. That can be really helpful too. For some people, glucosamine sulfate is really helpful. It can help to rebuild the discs. Fish oil is really terrific because it lubricates the joints and helps to reduce inflammation and helps to rebuild cell membranes. I like magnesium because it helps to calm the muscles down. And people tend to be depleted of magnesium because a lot of people don't eat their veggies. Mm. And even if they do eat their veggies, if they're not eating really good quality vegetables, there's not a lot of magnesium in them. So I try to, you know, encourage people to get more magnesium on board, as well as potassium. Potassium is also calming to muscles. And potassium is found in all kinds of fruits and vegetables. It's very high in certain ones like bananas and coconut water and in melons and things like apricots and prunes. So all any of your calming minerals are going to help. So nutrition can be a big help in helping to reduce back pain. But getting physical medicine is really important. Getting a regular program of chiropractic care, getting regular massages, getting physical therapy from a good physical therapist, getting acupuncture. And there are many other physical modalities, but those are the basic ones. And I like to encourage people to get those happening. So, Ron, you said that you had heard something about a way that we bend down to pick stuff up. What was that?
Okay, what it is there are other cultures in the world, and when they bend over to pick things up, they bend over in a far different way than we do here in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And the way that we bend over in the U.S., it was stated very simply, if you look down and you see a feather on the ground that you're going to pick up, and what we do as Americans often is we look down at it, so we'll actually curl our head down and tip it forward, and then we'll reach down to pick it up. So you put your body in a position which is what they call a cashew position. So think of yourself as a cashew nut,
mm-hmm.
kind of curled around,
yes.
right? And then we go down and pick it up, and that puts a tremendous amount of strain on your lower back. So what other cultures do, and what this person who was talking about this and had the story about this, was that they do what they call a hip hinge. And you bend from the waist, from the hip, and you let your hips hinge forward, and you keep your back flat and parallel to the floor. And then you stoop down and pick up the item off the floor. And if you concentrate on that and use that as part of a daily procedure to retrain yourself how to do that, you'll get rid of a lot of your lower back pain.
So that's like what a deadlift is.
It's exactly what a deadlift is. As a matter of fact, one of the other pieces that was brought up in the article was that deadlifters use this all the time
right.
as a practice. The other group that uses this as a practice all the time are football players.
Uh-huh.
And if you think about it, when you're watching these linemen get down nice and low in football and they're crouching down and getting ready to go, they're always looking forward.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So by looking forward, they're keeping their back in a flatter position and they're hinging from their hips. So the hip hinge is the answer.
So, and it's not just that you're hinging your hip, you're keeping the head in a neutral position. You're not tilting your head forward.
Right. No tilting of the head. Not at all.
Right.
You don't want to do that.
Well, because, yeah. And so what you always want to do is you want to take advantage of the strongest muscles that are going to help you in any circumstance. So if you're trying to hold your head up by using your cervical spine isn't nearly as strong as the rest of your rectus spinae, the ones that are in your lower back. So if you put your head in a neutral position and let your shoulders and let the rest of your back muscles hold your head up, that's going to be more efficient than letting your cervical spine hold your head up. Your cervical spine is a pedestal. It's not to be used to suspend the head.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so when you're in and when you're doing yoga, you're always encouraged to keep your head in a neutral pose. So like when you're doing table in yoga. So
right.
The table pose is when you're on all fours.
Mm-hmm.
Your head is supposed to be neutral. You're not supposed to be looking up and you're not supposed to be looking down. Your head is supposed to be in a neutral position. So you're kind
right.
of looking at the floor because your head is in line with your spine.
Right.
Yeah.
We did that last night.
You did table pose.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very
Bill's
good.
Big on table pose in
well,
Spoga.
Table pose is sort of it's sort of an easy pose for most people to get into, and you can get to a lot of other places from table pose.
Mm-hmm. Which is
that's why.
Exactly where he what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why. Because you can do, if you're in table pose, you can do balancing table. You can do balancing table with a bind. You can do C curves. You can do thread the needle. You know, you can get up and down in table pose. You can get into downward dog from table pose.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, yoga is really good for low back pain, in case you were wondering.
Yeah, it really is.
And in order to get access to yoga, you can take classes. You can go online and find little workouts on YouTube. You can find websites that will show you neat things. And I'll attempt to verbally tell you some exercises that are going to help your back. You know what I think we're going to do? On the Facebook Live this week, I'll have you film me and we'll show you some exercises
That's a great idea.
To help your core.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
Yeah, and that means you'll get to see me in my workout clothes. Yay!
Yay!
But
I get to see you in your workout clothes all the time.
Right. I didn't mean you. I meant the world. It's a little edgy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, the other thing is, and if you're not comfortable with this, if you're not comfortable with doing it, it is certainly worth your while to go to a yoga class. Go to a beginning yoga class and get some instruction.
Yeah.
Because what I see a lot with people when they're exercising, if they try to do it on their own, they don't necessarily do it the right way. I even see that with the machines that we have at the gym, where they're moving too quickly through their exercise, where you want to do it really slowly so you really engage your core. And so anyway, a little bit of time with a good qualified instructor makes a big difference.
Everybody knows how to stretch.
Nobody knows how to stretch.
Right.
Right.
So
right. Let's
talk about some exercises. So, you know, there's the standard crunch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan. I don't do them.
There's a lot of people that aren't a big fan of that.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems with the crunch is, what did we just say? We said that thing about the neutral neck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How easy is that to do with a standard crunch?
Right.
Because you tend to put your head. I mean, if you can lift your body, it's a good idea. Like, you don't want to be pulling on your neck if you're doing a standard crunch.
Because
then you cashew.
Right.
Yes. I really like cashews.
Yeah, I do too. I think they're delicious.
I think cashews are for eating.
Yes. Cashews are for eating, but not for position.
And they're really a good dairy substitute when you mush them up. I had cashew ice cream last night. Not cashew flavored ice cream, but had ice cream made out of cashews that was cinnamon flavored.
Does that still qualify as cream when you have cashew?
Well, I guess that depends on your... That's a really good question. I thought about this.
Yeah.
Because now there's a lot of cashew creamers on the market, or there are natural alternative creamers on the market. I think there's cashew creamers, definitely a couple of brands of coconut creamers on the market for your coffee.
And there's almond also. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. So are they technically cream? I guess it depends on what your definition of cream is, and if there's a food industry definition of cream. If cream is defined as that certain percentage of butterfat that comes off of milk, if that's what cream is, then no, you can't use cream. But if cream is defined, it can be defined as anything that has a creamy consistency.
The texture, right.
Because sometimes you'll see... That's what I'm not sure. It depends if it's a food industry word or not. If cream is definitely defined as something that is derived from milk, then it's not technically ice cream. It's frozen beverage that's made from cashews. So it's
easier to say
cashew frozen dessert.
Ice cream.
So I don't know that the product calls itself cashew ice cream.
That's, that's interesting.
It might call itself cashew dream, or it's
Yeah, I know that the rice-oriented
frozen
is called Rice Dream.
Right.
So, which sounds like ice cream because it's Rice Dream. So that's kind of a clever play on the words. But whether or not this is the same way, it's...
So get this.
Yeah.
The brand that I ate last night, which was so delicious, they call it cashew milk frozen dessert.
Frozen dessert.
So it's not ice cream.
Right.
So you can't call it ice cream. I mean, we can call it ice cream because we're just saying words.
Right.
But in terms of trademark law, they can't call it, I don't know that it's trademark. It's not trademark. It's probably a food industry definition. In order for you to call it ice cream, it has to be made from milk, and it has to have a certain percentage of fat in it.
Sure.
Because if
so
it doesn't.
So it's not about consistency. It's about the actual product
it's about what it is.
What it's made out of.
What I don't know is if let's see, if we look up cashew creamer.
Because you would put a skin cream on your skin and it's not necessarily made out of dairy.
But is it called skin cream?
That's a good question.
So
we're opening many little cans of worms here.
Yeah. So if you do cashew creamer, I don't know. I don't know if cashew creamer is a thing. So we'll have to look up coconut. So I have to look up coconut creamer. I don't know if any companies are making. So if you look up coconut creamer, first of all, the So Delicious brand calls their product coconut milk, and it's all one word.
Okay.
So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, they can't call their beverage milk.
Right.
Because it's not milk. It's not, doesn't come from the udders of an animal. So Delicious calls itself coconut milk. All one word.
Okay.
All right. And the next thing is that they do use the word creamer for their creamer products, that stuff that you're expected to pour into coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is called creamer.
Huh.
Whether they can say it's coconut cream, I don't know. We can say whatever we want, like I said.
Wow. This is really weird. Yeah.
This all came from talking about you don't want to be in the shape of a cashew when you do your core exercises.
Exactly.
So let's get back to the core exercises. So, then we have to wrap up.
Yeah. And then one other thing, just a quick reset. So how was it?
How was what?
The cashew milk frozen dessert.
Oh, it was lovely. It? Really good.
Because we never heard that. So.
Yeah. No, that's pretty yummy. I have had good success with various non-dairy desserts.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a good one. I'm real happy with that one.
Do you still have it?
In the house?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Are you willing to share?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll try it tonight.
Yeah, it was very good. it comes in a bunch of flavors. And you can get that same company makes coconut milk frozen dessert. And there are other companies that make, you know, non-dairy frozen desserts. Now, when Rice Dream came out, that was okay.
It's not great.
It has a ricey flavor
that isn't exciting.
Well, the thing is, if it's made from a cashew, cashews are nice and fatty and sweet.
Yeah.
They really lend themselves to being made into a frozen beverage or being made into creamy stuff. And also, if you're a vegan and you want to eat cheese, you can get cheese made from cashews, and you probably can't call it cheese either because it's not really cheese.
Here we go. Here we go again.
But you can get a savory. It's not even a dip because it stands up by itself.
Mm.
But you can get a savory cheeseoid substance that is quite delicious, made from cashews.
God. Oh boy!
I don't know. I actually don't know what they call it. If they can't call it
cheese,
I don't
know. We could do a whole show on this. So where were you going back to?
Alrighty. So some basic core exercises. Like I said, I don't recommend the standard crunch. There is a crunch that I love to do that I learned from Celine Yeager, who we had on a few months ago.
Right.
She was awesome.
Right, she was.
Yes. Yeah, so this crunch, I lay on an exercise ball. So I recommend getting an exercise ball. They're really versatile. You can do so many different exercises with them. They don't take a huge amount of space. They take some space up, but they're so versatile. You can do so many different things with them. So what I do with this ball is I lie on it in a crunch position with my feet. My legs are 90 degrees to the ground, and I get in a crunch position with my back, and then I do an oval. I make my head go in an oval, or I make my torso go in an oval. So instead of going up and down, my torso goes in an oval, and it feels so good on my back, and it's so much nicer to do than a standard crunch.
Huh.
Instead of going up and down, I go in an oval, so I'm pulling my spine in more different directions. It's very easy to do. That's one of the things I like about it. It's really easy to do. So that's one that I have taken to doing. I stopped doing bicycles on the floor, although that's something that people can do. I think that's not so easy to execute. I have been doing dead bug. It was recommended to me to do dead bug.
Dead bug.
It's really a silly name for the exercise. You're lying on your back with your four limbs in the air. That's
right.
The starting position. That's why it's called dead bug. It's very funny. And you lie. You don't actually lift your neck up. You lie on the ground. And what you do is one leg stays in the air. The other leg goes from 90 degrees to horizontal, mm-hmm. and you take the arm, the same arm with it, it goes down horizontal too. The opposite arm goes in the opposite direction. So you're in the dead bug, and you're going to, your four limbs are in the air. Your right arm and your left leg go down, and mm-hmm. your left arm goes back. We're going to have to do the Facebook Live video. That's silly. So dead, let's just suffice it to say dead bug.
Yeah.
All right? So there's dead bug, and then there's bird dog,
mm-hmm.
which is you get into table pose. That's mm-hmm. your resting position. And then you take one elbow, and you pull it to the opposite knee.
Mm-hmm.
off the ground, and you can alternate, or you can do a bunch of those, and so that's another thing you do. Your good old standard planks. Now, you have to execute the planks properly, and the key to executing the plank properly is to activate your core. It's mm-hmm. I know people say, don't stick your butt in the air, but that's only part of it. What it is you activate your core, and then that puts you in line.
It also helps to have someone observe it, so they make sure you're positioned correctly.
That you're activating. So, so we'll do that. So, I said, we'll show you a few core exercises to do. We'll put it on the Facebook Live, and that will be interesting for you to do. And then,
good idea.
Then it can help you with your back pain. And I find that since I've been doing so much core, my chiropractor keeps saying, hey, you're still in alignment. It's keeping me in alignment better. And after I do the actual core workout, my back hurts less. But I must say, doing regular stretching and so the other thing, another easy thing to do for your back, and then we have to wrap it up. But an easy thing to do for your back is check your bed. Please check your bed. If you haven't gotten a new mattress in a number of years, your mattress may be caving in, and there's no saving that. It's time to get a new mattress.
Yeah.
So if you find that your back is worse in the morning when you get up, check your mattress. It's probably time for us to flip our mattress.
Yeah. We haven't done that in a long time.
No, so maybe we have to flip
the
mattress.
Yeah, we should probably do that.
Okay. Yep. All right, so you've been listening to Radio Naturopath here on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. This is a talk show about naturopathic medicine with my co-host, Ron Meniza. And you can write me at any time at radionaturopath@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, all the same handle, at FranStorchND.
Oh, boy, you're making it simple now.
I know.
That's
it's great.
Great.
Well, Facebook business page made it so you could do that. That's a recent innovation, so I did that.
All right.
Anyway, so you've been listening to Radio Naturopath. We will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath when our very special guest will be Sue Cody. I can't wait. She's going to talk about essential oils and all kinds of interesting things that she's doing.
Yay.
And it'll be great to see her. I think that's next week, or maybe
that'll
that's 2 weeks.
I don't know.
Oh.
That's all right. We can.
All right. So we'll be back next week with more Radio Naturopath.
Yay.